Yesterday's talk introduced the purification of view. I kind of like thinking of it as the purification of viewing. The activity of seeing. And learning to see more clearly. Kind of before we start the actual sitting, I have a few things to say. As I think we know now that the Mahasi approach encourages mental noting. And I think of mental noting as mental acknowledging. It's kind of acknowledging what's here. And sometimes acknowledging the presence of something can give some relief or some clarity or some openness or freedom. If we're feeling some kind of way, but we don't know it, and we're acting something out, but we don't know how we are because we're preoccupied. And a friend comes and names what's happening for us. Oh, you're happy, aren't you? And you say, oh yeah. And it's like, oh yeah, that's what's happening. And something opens, something acknowledges, something we kind of, that acknowledgement can be very meaningful, that recognition. And sometimes the mental notes, mental acknowledgement, it helps to have it be that clear. To have it be, you know, a clear voice in the mind that says what it is. Sometimes the noting is almost not verbal. Sometimes certainly it's a little whisper or early on I said we can imagine that we're noting, that makes it very, very soft and almost like not a voice, if that's how you do it. And sometimes the acknowledgement, when you're quiet enough, sometimes you can feel before the mental note is to be made, the impulse to make the note. There's a very subtle little kind of impulse or mental movement or maybe a kind of mental energy or pressure or something that precedes the actual making the note. That impulse is only there because there already is a kind of recognition of what it is that should be noted. And sometimes that little quiet impulse is enough. It doesn't have to then continue into an actual note. So there's a wide range of ways in which this noting can be done. And then how we're mindful, how we're aware of something, how we note, is a very important part of the practice. And part of the practice is to experiment, try out different ways of how we're aware. So we can find a way that we're not, don't have a lot of extra in the knowing. Like we're straining, pushing, expecting. nothing, there's no tightening up, maybe without resistance. So there's a simplicity to the knowing, experimenting with finding a way that the awareness is not troubled by what it knows. If you're able to stay with the rising and falling, or with the experience of breathing, maybe there's occasionally subtle adjustments to be made in how you're aware or how you note, so that it's more settling or calming or centering. And then if there are things that take your attention away from the breathing, to experiment, to find a way where that's not troublesome, not seen as a mistake or a problem. But that thing that takes your mind away, rather than being seen as unfortunate, that itself becomes the anchor for a while. Be content to acknowledge that, to be present for that. Perhaps looking for that kind of acknowledgement or recognition or awareness. Or maybe there's a kind of freedom in relationship to what's known. Or untroubledness with what's known. And if you are reactive or troubled by what comes up, letting the acknowledgement, the awareness, turn to that. And let that be the simple thing that you know. In this way, there's nothing that's outside the scope of mindfulness. Whatever is up becomes the practice. And becoming at ease with flowing between different things that arise as it becomes necessary or as things become compelling. And then always when you can, when it's appropriate, to give some priority to the breathing, gently. And as your awareness is aware of first this, then that, then that, the object of awareness is change. But there's something about the knowing, being aware, which changes as well with what is known. But there's also something that's more consistent, familiar with how knowing is as we know different things. There's a sound and the knowing of it. A thought and the knowing of it. Sensation in the body and the knowing of it. And what the sound, the experience of sound, and the experience of thought, and the experience of sensation have in common is there's knowing of each. The knowing is not exactly the same as the sound, or the thought, or the sensation. In the knowing, there can be peace. In the knowing, there can be freedom. And part of the art of this sometimes is to discover what is it in the moment that can be acknowledged so there's some freedom. How far to step back, or what corners of the our experience have we left outside the scope of mindfulness? I'd like to say a few more words about the practice, and if it starts to be too many words for you, you're welcome just to let them pass right through you or not try hard to follow along. If there's something that was that's important for you, maybe it'll somehow stick. Sometimes when I've done mental noting, my attitude about saying the note is that it's a kind of a way of saying, what is this? Sometimes I use that as the note. What? What is this? And then I don't try to answer the question. But rather the question is kind of like opening the curtains to see what's outside. Or it's kind of like making a space to be receptive so the experience can show itself more clearly. It's like a welcome. It's more like a feeling or sensing something than it is having words to describe it or understand it. And one of the things that we note that can be useful is the ways in which new experiences come and become predominant, that where the attention kind of goes to those more fully. That's different than the rising and falling, or the breathing, or the anchor. So it's quite natural that if there's suddenly a very large sound outside or somewhere, that the attention would go to that or take it in. You don't have to even want to or direct it to. And so when that sound is loud, then you might say hearing or sound. And if it persists, saying hearing or saying sound can be kind of like, what is this? Let me feel it, experience it. Let me allow it to come more fully into focus. But what happens when there's some large thing that naturally makes the attention kind of leave the breathing and or something else kind of pulls the attention is we are switching our place of the anchor for a moment, shifting where the center is or the focus is. And there's an art to just kind of flowing with the switch and the change. Be at ease with it, relaxed. And then when it's time to begin with the anchor again, to not be in a hurry, not jerk the mind back, but just flow back or open back, open to it again. An image that I offer for this is kayaking here off the coast of Santa Cruz. I don't know much about kayaking, so please be permissive with the analogy. So I can imagine that someone's out there in a kayak and they're kayaking parallel to how the waves are coming in. And their waves are somewhat large, but not dangerous. But they're far enough out, so they're not breaking. They're just... So when the waves come, the kayak gets lifted up. Comes to the top, and then it's put down in the wave. But they're large enough, the waves, that the kayaker maybe has to lean towards the waves. So the larger kind of waves doesn't leave you too far the other direction. Maybe tip you over. And the kayaker is quite skilled. It's not dangerous, but every time they feel a wave come, they lean towards it, into it. They're really there for it. And they get lifted up, and they feel the lifting. And when they get put down again, they can come back. The kayaker can be upright again. And it's, you know, kind of second nature to do that. Every once in a while, perhaps, this very skilled kayaker forgets to do that, or it's a big enough wave, and it maybe flips them over so they're underwater. And a skilled kayaker could easily kind of just flip the back up again. And the kayaker probably wouldn't be flipped over upside down the water and have some wonderful fantasy about something. And no need to flip over. The fantasy is really good. Wander off and stay with the fantasy and this and that and go and think. And, you know, 10, 15 minutes later, kind of realize this is a nice fantasy, but, you know, I was supposed to be breathing. You know, the character wouldn't take that time. They would flip over, you know, flip back up relatively quickly. So it's best if you don't drown in your thoughts. It's best that you kind of flip yourself up again and be ready. And there's all kinds of things will come along. The sounds or a thought or an emotion, a feeling, and all kinds of things which are not the anchor. And you might think of them, approach them, it's just another wave coming. There's lots of waves that'll come. And how you kind of flow with the waves, how you lean into them, how you note them, how you're aware of them. Is part of the art of this, the game, the, you know, just kind of be at ease with it. The important part is not really, in some ways, it's not really what you are focusing on, what you're aware of. You have to be aware of something, but rather the clarity in which you know it, or the quality of the acknowledgement, the awareness, how we're aware. The how is actually... And the more we can feel or sense into the how we're aware, kind of the natural, there's a naturalness to it that we can more clearly see that there is this distinction between what we know and the knowing. And then with that distinction, we can begin seeing if we can let how we know be clear and relaxed. Move into the wave in a relaxed way, be lifted up by the experience, and experience passes, and we're just there for the duration. And finally, I'll say that the kind of things that the waves that will come are all kinds. And in the course of a day of practice like we're doing here, our practice will go through different phases. And I think it's very helpful to take each phase as just the phase of the moment and it's appropriate. Some people have the interesting experience that as we move from one phase to another, and I use the word phase very loosely, from one kind of, sometimes we're more calm than less calm, or sometimes more clear and less clear, sometimes more concentrated and less concentrated, kind of different ways that we are. That sometimes in moving between phases, it's kind of like moving in a manual transmission car, you're moving from one gear to the next, and you spend a little bit of time in neutral. The car's in neutral for a moment or two. And sometimes our psychophysical system is getting ready to, or is making a transition from one phase to the other. And it can be a phase in between neutral, where things are not that clear. You're not so connected to kind of the object of attention, or it doesn't feel like the mindfulness quite has the oomph that it had before or something. And it's easy to kind of get discouraged or think that this doesn't really count or do something. But it's just you're in neutral and your whole system is getting ready to go into a new gear. And so just you have to go along with that wave. Or you go through the analogy of like going through layers of the mind, and you might be quite settled and calm, and suddenly you find yourself with a whole new volcano of thoughts. And, oh no, I've gone really far backward. I'm back to where the first day or something. You never go back to the first day. Maybe you're actually going down through layers of the mind, purification processes, and you've kind of touched some corner or some layer that something there that's been kind of finally has been freed up, and as it kind of purifies or empties out, it gets more active. And so rather than being upset that suddenly there's a volcano of thoughts, it's just, oh, okay, this is a big wave. Let's try not to drown. Let's stay upright and lean into it and be present for this as well. And maybe I already said finally, but finally, it's like Brian's the most important thing, is one of the phases that's completely natural in a day for many people is to, at some point in the day, to get a little more tired. The mindfulness not to be so clear. And some people, it helps to see there's a pattern. Some people are clear in the morning, less clear in the afternoon. Some people see the other way. Some people get clear and brighter in the evening. Some people get more tired and less clear with awareness in the evenings. It's all different individuals have different patterns. And it's kind of natural to happen. You don't have to be upset that you're tired or the clarity of mindfulness is not as strong as it used to be earlier in the day or something. But one of the ways in which this practice develops over time is that you offer the practice the best effort that's available. And even effort varies over time. There's sometimes it feels like the effort is just stellar. Wow. And other times it's like, it's like difficult to pull it up. It's not really there so strong. You're tired or something. So you don't have to have stellar effort all the time. Don't have to hold yourself against that reference point. The practice unfolds really well if you just offer the best that's available. And when it's not so stellar, the fact that you're offer your best that you have for that moment, that's all that's needed. And that's what allows for continuity. If you try to go back to the stellar effort, you probably just mess it up. So just keep offering the best that you have. And then be content with that. And I did warn you, it might be a lot of words. So, finally. I'm quite capable of sitting and being somewhat present as I sit. The bell rings, and get up and walk down the steps, put on my shoes. Start walking into the community hall, and only then realized that I've been thinking the whole way since the bell rang down to being in the community hall. I managed to go down the steps without making a single note, without being really aware. I kind of felt I was aware because I was kind of walking slow and kind of, you know, doing the thing, but it's kind of, I was tricked into it, the thinking I was, you know, but really I was just in thought. One of the functions of mental noting, if you can, especially, you know, in all the time, but also in going around in between the scheduled sittings and walkings, is that if you do a kind of relaxed, ongoing way, you're much more likely to catch yourself getting wandering off in thought than if you don't do mental noting. So if you happen to make 5 notes as you go down the steps here, you're much more likely to note that you're actually spending your time thinking going down the steps, and you can make an adjustment than if you don't note at all. It might feel like the note is extra and busy, but if you look back and realize, you know, for the last minute I've just been drifting off in thought, it was kind of pleasant, but I wasn't really here in that good way. Then you realize, you know, that mental note would have been helpful, even though it seems like a little bit too much. It actually is not too much. That keeps you on track. So maybe there's a way of using the notes to meet every wave that comes along. I hope you enjoy the day. Thank you. And I have one announcement. We have one of the retreatants who is arriving today. There was one person because of circumstances that this was when she could finally arrive. And her name is Joanne. And supposedly arriving in the afternoon. And so you will see someone who's new and a new wave coming. And she's staying upstairs here in room 214. So you'll see her up here. And so I hope that in your hearts welcome someone, a new part of the community. And Joanne will become the cook for the second week. So people in the kitchen will see a bit more contact with her when she, you know, on Sunday. Thank you.